welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
And by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is Drew.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen. And not a one of you is prepared for it.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road. And, you know, anyway. Welcome. This is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
This is Drew.
And tonight, we're going to finish our Dune. Well, not quite finish, but we're going to get to the end of Frank Herbert's Dune with Children of Dune, a miniseries from 2003.
You're not finishing Frank Herbert's Dune because there's lots more Dune. You're finishing the miniseries of Dune, the TV miniseries.
I've come to realize Dune will never end.
No.
I think I'm still watching this miniseries, and what's happening right now is just a fantasy.
Perhaps you're possessed by characters from an earlier miniseries.
Maybe.
In 2003, so just a couple years after the first miniseries, which was sci-fi's blockbuster hit.
Yes.
In fact, this and the other hit are like two of the three biggest sci-fi things ever. Maybe until Sharknado came along.
Oh, God. Really? That's what the comparison is?
Well, no. I mean, not in quality, but in
No, I didn't mean in quality. There's no comparison in quality.
So, welcome back, Drew.
Thank you. Thanks for having me back.
Brother Jay, you're gonna introduce us back to the world of Dune. What is your opinion, generally, of Children of Dune? Just, did you like it when you first saw it? What do you,
I did.
How do you think it compares?
Compares to what?
To the filmic version we've seen. The cinematic portrayal.
This is good. It's two books put together. So there are clearly some pieces missing, but due to the density of Mr. Herbert, they're not necessarily integral to understanding the story. This does the denouement of this series does kind of put a good exclamation point on the end of this kind of trilogy, and does start into the next set of books. And the next book has a different tone.
So was the first episode an entire book and the second two episodes a separate book?
Not really. Dune Messiah was the second book. Mm-hmm. And it really...
Is it the end of Paul, though? I mean, is because this... It seemed like... Well, I guess Paul wasn't at the end, really.
Dune Messiah is kind of the end of Paul, but he's in Children... Children of Dune is about Paul's children, but that encapsulates the time, including up to and including their lack of conception, and birth. So... Dune Messiah is really kind of about the fallout from Dune and where he was going and the foundation he was laying for the future.
Okay, but before we get there, because I've got serious questions about the beginning of this movie. I think it encapsulates the Dune Messiah, but we'll get there. Drew, what was your first reaction to watching this?
This was difficult. This was really hard to get through.
Okay, but why?
I had no idea what was going on. There seemed to be things happening or people showing up that were supposed to be of like great importance and like have a lot of gravity to them that I did not get or feel. Like Duncan Idaho seems like he was supposed to be a big deal. Didn't remember him from the first movie. I mean, I remember mention of the name because it's a ridiculous name. But didn't remember the character at all. But having him show up here with like three different like soap opera reveals, and it had no impact on me, no emotional impact on me whatsoever.
Also, it was a different actor than the first series.
I had no idea.
I think that also doesn't help.
Yeah, like, was I supposed to know that the princess had a sister? That was never a thing, right?
What do you mean the princess had a sister? Oh, you mean Jessica had a sister?
No. No, wasn't Susan Sarandon the other lady's sister? The Muad'Dib's wife's sister, right?
Irulan?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, she's from the same house. So yeah, she's Irulan's sister.
Okay, the house
Carino.
The house mm-hmm. Carino was Emperor Saladin's house?
Yes.
Was that ever mentioned in either of the presentations we've seen?
Yes.
Just they actually in passing, mentioned though. His house name?
Yeah.
Okay, because I didn't know that at all. I thought this was like a magic new...
No, it's not well exposed, just like Seleucus Secundus isn't well exposed.
Yeah, the well sebaceous exposed. Semantics or whatever, that planet or whatever, was that the Emperor's planet?
Yes.
Wasn't he on another planet, though?
So, House Carino is the house. House Atreides was on Caladan.
Yes.
So, House Carino was in... House
lives in Giddy Prime.
Right. And so, House Carino was in, and I, of course, I've now forgotten, Kaitan?
Yeah.
Seleucus Secundus is a prison planet. It was the Emperor's prison planet. So... all of the outcasts and jailed felons and convicted bad people were banished to Seleucus Secundus.
So they were exiled there when the defeat of the emperor?
No, that was the emperor's exile place for people. Shaddam would exile people there, punish them. It was a prison.
Did he exile his own daughter there?
Yeah, why was she there?
So Wenceslao was only there... because they lost Kaitan because the House Carino fell.
But she wasn't like a prisoner there.
No. They were just out of power. And so they became a minor house and ended up back. You know, the only real place they had to fall back to was you know, their meager surroundings.
So Sebaceous Sarandon planet, that's like Australia. Like they went back to live in Australia, which is no longer a prison colony.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I think it was still a prison colony. It just wasn't. It wasn't as stocked as it was before, because there was less people getting sent there. Because
Muad'Dib was murdering everybody.
He was doing like intergalactic mass genocide.
Well, also he was squeezing the spice production and not allowing people transport.
But he was mass murdering everybody and all these other planets. I mean, I was looking at it like a World War II documentary, and I couldn't tell whether he was Stalin or Hitler, but he was one of them, or maybe both of them.
Jihad. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I told you.
Paul's on terrorist, like shooting people in the back of the head.
He's not a great guy.
Evidently not.
Yeah. He meant well in the beginning.
There is no evidence of it in this series, though.
No.
So, yeah, it was a dark turn for me. All of a sudden, you know, these people that were the rebels are now the Empire.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's a lesson to us all. I don't know. But it's like, well, it seemed like a lot of stuff happened in those 12 years that they yada yadded.
I think the lesson is that Herbert was very big on promoting the cyclical nature of human beings and how things always cycled. And that history was rife with examples of history just repeating itself. And, you know, it was his little commentary, if you will.
Hmm.
Because Paul became a dictatorial tyrant, and his power corrupted him in some ways.
Hmm. Yeah, it was hard for me to take. Because when we introduced to this series, we have Paul, who is the emperor. And he's still shacked up with Chaney. And then we have the Fremen armies, who are the worst guys ever. They make House Harkonnen look like Powderpuff Football League.
Well, the Fedaiken, the Holy Warriors have taken the front.
And so those are the...
the super ultra religious Fremen.
Okay.
The divine Fremen.
Yeah. So the Paul... the Paul character was so weird because he's set up as like a Christ analog, right? But yeah, then like Eric said, you've got his Stalin years kind of thrown in the middle. But in the beginning, he's the Messiah. And then at the end, he's sort of the Jesus turning over all the money changing tables style of Christ.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. He's trying to right the what he feels is the wrong that he perpetrated through some poor choices on his part.
It seems like the Bene Gesserits, waiting for the piano to catch up, and then the Spacing Guild, they're very, there's not really much of this movie. I mean, I thought it was a startling turn when they assassinate
the guild representative.
Well, also the high priestess of the Bene Gesserits, right?
Yes, Helen Mohayam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was during like the Godfather montage.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did they actually say all accounts will be settled? Was that a line in this
series? I think it may have been, yes.
Janie and I will take this one.
Wadi.
I know the way better than anyone else still. Except perhaps you. You must remain here, as we agreed. Time to settle accounts.
Yeah, so it's a strange Godfather ripoff. Okay, and what is a gola? Is it like a golem? Like the Jewish...
So, the gola in Dune... So, in the Dune universe, golas have existed by the Ixians. The Bene Tlilax create them.
That's true. Is shaking his head as I am because I don't know any of these names either, and I'm reading them off of the plot notes on Wikipedia right now.
So the Bene Tlilax exist in the fringe of the universe, and they skirt the Butlerian Jihad rules by creating machines that can basically think, because it's against the law. It's against religion. It's against all of that to make any machine that can think for itself. That was outlawed. But they kind of skirt that because they're kind of on the fringe of the universe. And so they just kind of do their own thing. Historically, in the book, which isn't made very clear in the series.
It's not in the series at all.
You have to... It's discussed really in a really minor way, but you're right. In the book, the Bene Tlilax have been trying to create golas for generations that were capable of recalling memory of the original cells that were the origin of the gola.
It's like an altered carbon thing where you can download somebody's consciousness into a meat body.
Well,
okay, hold on. Duncan Idaho, is this a person or is this a machine?
He's a person.
He is a person that has Duncan Idaho's memories?
So that's the thing. He doesn't have Duncan Idaho's memories. He has all of Duncan Idaho's DNA. He has all of Duncan Idaho's traits and characteristics. But he's basically a replicant, if you will. He's been created in the axolotl tanks that the Bene Tlilax create things from. And so they create these synthetic genetic copies of original beings. So if they have the cells, they can create a copy, which is a near perfect copy. There are some issues. In the book, they don't have real eyeballs. They have mechanical eyeballs. So in the book, you can tell a gola because they have sterling silver eyes.
Huh.
So you know a gola on sight. So this, they didn't use that in the series, and who knows why, but whatever.
They blew their eye budget on other things.
Yeah. So, but a gola had up to this point, a gola had never truly remembered all of the memories of its origin. It had only ever received memories that were inserted into it by a process that they use.
So it's not taking someone's consciousness and putting it into another body. It's actually just making another body.
Yes.
And that then they somehow make a consciousness, whatever.
And in the book, his name is not Duncan Idaho in the book. In the book, his name is Haight, H-A-Y-T, Haight.
Haight. Does he look like Duncan Idaho, or is he just a gift?
He looks like Duncan Idaho. Oh. He is generated from Duncan Idaho. The only difference physically from him next to Duncan Idaho was the eyes.
Okay.
In the book, he preferred people call him, he would say, I'm not Duncan Idaho, I am Hate. And the subplot, which I'll just spoil it now. The subplot is that the Ixians are using, they're trying to use the whole subplot of
plots within plots.
Yes. They're trying to use the whole subterfuge of possibly, you know, having Chaney die and threatening to assassinate the children to bring Duncan Idaho's full rage out and see if they can induce him to finally recalling his memories, which he does. And at that point, that was what they were trying to go for, because once they had perfected the technology to figure out how to do that, then they knew they could do that with anybody. Now, it's expensive, and you have to have original cells and blah, blah, blah. And so it's not, you can't just do it with everybody, but.
And this Duncan Idaho Gala was also conditioned to assassinate Paul. He was like the Manchurian president.
Yep.
Okay, which of those nonsense words that you said was a face dancer?
Yeah, what is a face dancer?
Well, the face dancers are, the Benetlilaks are face dancers.
Okay, and the Benetlilaks are a whole different race of people out in the fringes.
Thank you for that answer. That did not help me at all.
Well, okay, Benetlilak, which is words I've never heard before as far as I can tell. Okay, so they are like a different house or a different race or a different group that we haven't heard from yet until this book.
So the face dancers are basically the servants for the Benetlilaks. So think of, so you have the Bene Gesserits, which are witches, and you have the Benetlilaks, which are kind of these miscreant sorcerer wizards.
Okay. And what are the Telexu?
The Benetlilaks, they're Telexu.
Okay, all right. So the Bene Gesserit, the Spacing Guild, and the Benetlilaks all want to get rid of Moadib.
Everybody wants to get rid of Moadib except for the people on Arrakis.
Because he's
except
a
for
monster.
The Fremen of Arrakis.
Yeah, I was going to say, plenty of people on Arrakis don't seem to like Moadib either because he's fucked up their planet.
Well, he is threatening all of industry and all of the universe.
And all of the ecology of Arrakis.
By controlling the spice production, and basically ends spice production.
But he also changes the ecology of the planet, and which also messes with all of their traditions.
Yes, but changing the ecology of Arrakis ends spice production.
Well, yeah. And then there's this whole subplot about growing worms on other planets that they never resolve, do they?
No, that worm's still back there in Australia.
Yeah.
Just hanging out, being all sad.
Surfing.
Pacing back and forth.
He eventually dies.
Okay, but...
No worm ever survives off-planet.
Ever, ever, ever? Mm.
Ever, ever, ever.
Okay.
Just like the eventual last panda.
Kind of.
It took a dark turn.
It is. It's a dark and yet charming, cute turn. So we have this Susan Sarandon, by the way, shows up. And
yeah.
She's got wacky hair.
Oh, yeah.
And or hats or whatever.
Accessories.
Yeah. And I thought she
accoutrement.
Was, I'm going to go out on a limb, and I think it's you're going to disagree. Both of you will disagree with me. I thought she was horrible.
Oh, she wasn't good.
I thought she was just terrible. And by the end, I thought maybe they only had her for like 6 days. It's because
she was super... She was super stiff.
Well, and by the end, I swear, she was acting in front of a green screen, and everybody else was like everybody else was standing up and whatever, and she was walking in front of them, but she was not in the same room as anybody else in that thing.
That's
she
possible.
Came on for like 6 lines and took her paycheck.
I think it was a bit of stunt casting.
No, I wholeheartedly disagree with you. I think she was amazing. She took garbage dialogue and did her best to try and sell it.
She claims to love the series. She claims to love the powerful women in the Dune universe. The Duneverse.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah. Good for her.
So, okay, so we have this whole thing with Duncan Idaho, and we'll just cut to the chase here, and Duncan Idaho, because he still has Duncan Idaho's DNA, he actually he breaks through his programming, or Paul breaks his programming, or something.
Both.
But wait, why do we care about Duncan Idaho?
Because it's the name that is so stupid, you cannot get rid of it.
Fundamental question I never could never figure out.
Paul and Duncan were very good friends because Duncan taught him how to fight and how to war. Gurney was the war master, but Duncan was this kind of this, he had more of the strategy teachings. So Gurney gave him physical fighting tips, but Duncan gave him defensive and intellectual combat tactics.
Well, Duncan was like the favorite uncle.
Yeah, they sparred. And the whole reason that Duncan's important, not important as Duncan as much as he's important because he's used as leverage against Paul when Chaney dies, because the Bene Tlaloks want influence over Paul so they can regain their spice quota and get back into production in the universe. And by proving to Paul that they can indeed revive and bring back his beloved with full memory and recall, like, see, we did it to your friend, but we could do it for somebody even more important to you.
Like someone we're going to kill or have killed or die in childbirth.
They didn't have her killed, but yes.
Well, okay, and that's the other thing about this beginning, this first part of the miniseries, this whole Messiah part of it, is the theme of Paul cannot outrun the prophecy.
Correct.
He sees the future, and he knows where it's going, and he can't do really anything to change it. That's so right. Even though his wife, Irulan, has been poisoning his lover so she can't get pregnant,
right?
He actually doesn't mind because at least it gives her more time because he has foreseen that she's going to die in childbirth.
Yes.
And his sister,
Alia,
played by Alanis Morissette, is...
she was terrible.
Yeah, she was not
great. She was truly terrible. She looked bad. Her performance was bad.
I think she was directed to act as goofy soap opera-y as she was, though.
Yes.
Because she literally gets possessed in this movie. And so she's got to go from character to character, from, you know, she does the, it's my sister, my daughter, my sister, my daughter, a couple different times. And she is also had not likable. The
worst costumes.
Oh, I don't know. Susan Sarandon had pretty bad costumes and hair.
No, they were outlandish and maybe ridiculous, but they were still like, they had high production value. They just put Aaliyah in like some parachute pants and like a halter top for several scenes.
Well, in the book, she kept taking her clothes off a lot, so.
Yeah, well, okay, and she is doing it with the priest, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the priest is who again?
He's inconsequential. He's
in cahoots with Sarandon.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
He's an agent of House Carino.
Yeah. Yeah. So Muad'Dib is now becoming a, instead of a hero, he's like a gangster. Literally, Godfather.
He's a warlord.
And so he's got to go. And everybody wants him gone. And he knows it's prophesied that he's going to go away or something. And now, how does he get blind again?
So, they figured they could assassinate him, and so they tricked him into a basically getting him to come out to see Othium,
the dude with the spitting disease.
Yes, Othium from who is the same actor in the last series.
Who was Othium again?
He was one of the Fedaiken. He came when Paul was creating the Holy Army to start the revolution, he was the one when he said, you know, bring us 100 of your best men and we will train them, and 100 will become 1,000, and 1,000, blah, blah. Othium was one of the 100 that came as one of the holy warriors.
Okay.
So he was one of the first really trusted people, and he came to Paul and said, we wish to be in your service. So he was very trusted and very integral to the success of the whole revolution. So through some subterfuge of the murder of a couple other people, some face dancers imitated some people that Paul had been known from the siege, and they kind of manipulated Othium into helping them, unbeknownst to Othium. And so Paul...
And their plan to kill Paul was to set off a bomb way far away from him.
Well, no. Well, the stone burner was an atomic, and it should have wiped him out. But he knew it was coming, and so he basically moved himself out of the path, the direct path.
And yet, theoretically, still thousands of people died.
Yes, thousands of people did die.
Yeah.
Okay. But not the most annoying person in the entire history of the universe. That little guy lived.
Yes.
Oh, God. Yeah. Okay. So Alia takes the throne and dispatches all of their enemies, including the Bene Gesserit head woman.
I thought that's while Paul was still around.
Was that... I thought... Had Paul not gone to the siege by that point, or I don't know. See, so many things happen in this show. they really did try to cram a ton of stuff in here.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Again, it was two books crammed together.
Well, but even just this first part, I'm only on the first of the three episodes of this miniseries.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the first part, Paul walks into the desert and mm-hmm. Ali is now on the throne. And the two children are safe, or they're being... Irulan is teaching them or something? How are the children...
Irulan has taken guardianship.
Okay, and she's off in the desert hiding someplace?
The children are being raised in the siege.
Okay.
In one of the sieges.
So that they are not attacked and killed because...
Because Paul wanted them raised as Fremen.
Okay. Not because there are assassins who want to kill them.
But the children are born fully prescient.
Yeah, they're like Alia, who was given the water of life in the womb or whatever. They
except
are pre-born.
Except that they were pre-born, but they were actually retain all the knowledge of all their four ancestors. So they actually, as opposed to Alia, which just got the Bene Gesserit transfer and became aware, the children were pre-born but also received all of their past ancestors at the same time. So Leto says at one point, you know, I am older than you think I am, because he has inside his head all of his ancestors and they're all present, and so he can recall them. He can imitate their voices, and he actually channels them in a way that they actually, in the book, they actually speak through him as a vessel, and it is truly their spirit.
Okay, so now we're going to talk about ghosts, because we end up with a demonic possession of sorts here.
Yes.
Or maybe not of sorts, maybe just outright possession, right? They call it a possession. Somewhere along the way, Alia was possessed by Baron Harkonnen.
Yeah. Yes.
Because he's an ancestor.
So the ancestors can possess you through some sort of ritual that everybody knows about? Or is it prophesied that she is possessed?
So those that are pre-born in such a way, if they take enough spice, they become corrupted and they have to fight off the possession. And if they're not strong enough, they don't survive. They don't make it past the possession.
So Alia is a weak junkie whore,
basically. And the reason that she got
overwrought, a slut. She's a slut.
Well, however, I'm not semantics, you know. Because she couldn't, she kept taking the spice to try and see the future, and she couldn't see the future. She didn't understand why she couldn't see the future, and the reason she couldn't see the future is because she was dead.
In the
but
future?
But she didn't know, she didn't, yes, she didn't know that, and so she just kept thinking, I'm not taking enough to see the future, I'm not taking enough to see the future, and so she kept taking it and ended up
see, I must
possessed.
Have missed that episode of this miniseries. Or
that was not in the miniseries.
I was going to say. All right.
But she did say it. I mean, she did say it to Duncan when he rescued her the first time he caught her overdosing. She kept saying, I can't see the future. You know, I can't see it. I need to be able to see it. And he was like, you know, you've taken too much.
So. Okay. So, and also, part of the reason Paul went out into the desert is because that's what the Fremen do to blind people.
Yeah.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
If you're blind, I assume there's other disabilities that get treated the same way, but they don't really discuss those.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was one thing they actually spent the time to lay a foundation for with that blind kid in the very beginning.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
About how they didn't send him out to the desert in violation of their traditions.
Yes. But also, Paul paid for anyone who wanted to lay Laxu eyes at the stone burning.
Ah, okay.
So he didn't want any of them cast out. And he said, anybody who wants, I will pay for their eyes.
I do remember that. It would have been nice if they had some tinfoil eyes in there. But oh well. Like I said, their eye budget was pretty small.
Yeah, so what can you do?
Yeah, so now we go on to part two, which is, again, way in the future now. Not way in the future, but like, 18 years in the future, something like that?
15, okay. 16.
Yeah. So another, and we meet Paul and Chaney's children, Leto the Second, and
Ganema, mm-hmm.
And at first, I thought they were young lovers until I realized they were brother and sister.
So because they're pre-born, they could actually hear and share each other's thoughts a lot.
Ah, okay.
So they're very close in spirit, not in some dirty way.
So now Irulan,
mm-hmm.
is adopted them, kind of in her heart or whatever.
Well, Irulan realizes that she killed Chaney.
Yes.
And that wasn't her intent, and that she had not anticipated that happening.
Even though she was poisoning her for years?
Well, she didn't know she was poisoning her. She just knew that she was suppressing the pregnancy. Because that's what Helen Mohiam told her.
Using poison.
But she didn't know it was poison. So it
and
was.
And she. Why does she think she killed her?
Because the contraceptive agent drug that was given to Chaney, once Chaney stopped taking it and then conceived, because of what the drug had done to her, she had such an accelerated gestation that's what caused her to die, because it taxed her body too much. Also, the fact that she had twins. And that's what tweaked Paul out, is because Paul hadn't seen twins.
Yes, yes. Ganema is, or whatever her name is a surprise.
Yeah.
Because he sees Leto.
Yeah. Yep. And Chaney didn't tell him because she was like, he doesn't see it. It'll be a wonderful surprise, because he's not often surprised because he's the damn Messiah. So she's like, this would be a good gift for him. You know, because I can't give him anything else that he's surprised by, because I give him gloves, I give him, you know, a hat, he knows, and you know, goddamn Tight shoes, and can't fucking give him a box of chocolates. But, you know, I'm going to crank out this kid and he'll be surprised. Hmm.
Thank you for the shirt. I have loved it forever.
So, Irulan did cause Chaney's death almost directly. So she feels super guilty. And she is. She is guilty of it. She did it. And so as her way to make amends, because she does love Paul. She makes a pledge that she will guard the children with her life.
Okay. And now, Aaliyah, in the meantime, has married Duncan.
Yes.
And this is where we learn that Irulan's sister is...
Wenceslea.
Susan Sarandon.
Yes.
And she is going to return to power, because we forget this is a a court intrigue tale as well. We have the royal family.
Palace intrigue.
Yeah, there you go. So... So we have Farradin.
Prince Farradin.
Yes. Who's kind of a dim bulb.
Yeah, he's kind of a poncy butthead.
Yeah.
He's a real wuss.
Yeah.
Yes.
So Paul and Aaliyah's mother, Jessica, arrives back on Arrakis to visit her family, accompanied by Gurney, what's his name?
Gurney Halleck.
Yes.
And what have they been doing? They ran off at some point.
They went back to Caladan.
Because they didn't like what Paul was doing as Moadib?
Jessica didn't want to stay on Arrakis because it reminded her too much of Leto's murder, and she just couldn't handle it. Through all the struggle and all the death, she needed to get back to somewhere where she could center herself and kind of remember her life with Leto, because that's really what she missed.
Also not in the miniseries.
She knew that Dune, that Arrakis was going to take her son, and it already took her husband. And so she just wanted to insulate herself for a little while.
So she's Grandma Anderson, and Arrakis is Alaska.
Something like that. Hey.
Too much?
Maybe a little bit too soon. Yeah, so then we got the preacher that shows up. And does anybody not know the preacher is Paul?
In the book, he actually screens himself. In the book, as the reader, you know it's Paul, but no one else knows it's Paul. Everyone else thinks it's this crazy preacher, because he uses a series of screens so that he's not seen. Like mesh screens. He uses like a veil because of his appearance, because his eyes and his flesh have started to rot. And
so as if he grew a big beard and wore like an army hat and was on satellite TV for hours at a time.
So in the book, people in no way believe it's Paul.
Okay.
But they make jests at it, like, oh, that's, you know, it's just Paul. That's just Muad'Dib. But no one seriously believes it's him. They all believe it's not him. They think it's some crazy, you know, insane, stupid heretic.
But nobody arrests him or anything. Like,
well,
they will full on slaughter a planet full of people. But this crazy heretic guy?
Here's the problem. The chance that he could be, in some teeny tiny small way, teeny, teeny, teeny tiny, he might be Muad'Dib. The villagers, they want him back.
Because everybody is still worshiping the cult of Moadib, right?
Yes, yes.
Then we have this whole possession. And we have one of my favorite characters back, Baron Harkonnen. Which is great, but also a little much.
A lot of people liked him in the last series. So again, I think this was also a little stunt casting.
Fan service, yeah.
Yeah.
Was this not in the books?
It was in the books, but not his he was crazy over the top.
Well, I cannot imagine if David Lynch was given the opportunity or even wanted the opportunity to make this story, his Baron Harkonnen, I don't think I would have enjoyed it at all, but the Baron Harkonnen from the Dune miniseries was great. I loved him. He was over the top, but he was also fun.
Yeah.
It's too bad Aaliyah wasn't fun.
She wasn't meant to be.
I guess
she was meant to be tragic.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of soap opera tragedy going on.
Mm-hmm.
Then we get the twins and James McAvoy.
Oh, by the way, I love Alice Krieg as Jessica.
Oh, yeah.
She was great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She was probably the best thing in this miniseries.
Probably.
I think she was supposed to be Jessica in the first miniseries, but there was a conflict, right?
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. It's great casting because she is... Her face is perfect. She is so great at giving the withering, knowing looks.
And maybe it was the costumes, but she reminded me a little bit of Katharine Hepburn in A Lion in Winter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's what they were going for.
Okay. But, well, mission accomplished.
Yeah, I could have watched a whole miniseries of just her and Susan Sarandon.
Bitch slapping each other around.
Just staring at each other with raised eyebrows. But what would you call it if you just had like a contest of these two women just staring at each other, trying to outdo one another with just expressions? Would face you off? Call that a face off?
Okay, very nice. I like that quite a bit.
Thanks for going there with me.
Yeah. Face off. Face. So, good King Wenceslaus, or whatever her name is, she...
Wencesia.
Yes. She is... her son, Carlos Wencesia, stole a bunch of jokes. Anyway, but he stole them from Bill Cosby, so, you know, maybe we should give the guy a break. Anyway, so...
He was just really tired.
I thought Kanye said he was innocent.
Yeah, yeah. Kanye says everybody said
it was his choice.
One of my favorite tweets was that somewhere there are three children that believe Kim Kardashian is their smart parent. Who would have thought? anyway, so we have this murder plot because...
Which murder plot? There's lots of murder plots.
Yeah, everybody's here. Got it. Everybody's in a murder plot here.
It's nearly Shakespearean.
Plots and plots and plots.
Yes.
Yeah.
We have the ghost of Baron Harkonnen guiding Aaliyah to try to, what, kill the kids?
He's just trying to get revenge any way he can.
Okay.
He wants her to kill everybody.
But Irulan makes sure she takes the kids out of the way. And yeah. Jessica knows that Aaliyah has become dangerous. And I guess Jessica advises Irulan to take the kids away.
Yeah. Like, the bitch is crazy. Let's go.
Yeah. Then there's an assassination plot involving CGI tigers.
Yes.
And a cliffhanger ending. And then we start part three, where things get a little wacky. Because Leto, the young James McAvoy Leto, who was actually very charismatic. I thought like, his character was fine. He had a twinkle in his eye, blah, blah, blah. And his sister was cute, but she didn't have nearly the character.
She wasn't supposed to.
Yeah. And then, Duncan murders Aaliyah's lover.
Yes. Basically, Duncan does that because he knows it will throw Stilgar over the top. And it will draw Stilgar into the feud.
Oh, this was another thing that I had a huge problem with this miniseries. So they recast Stilgar.
Yes.
And the entire time, he was giving me a real uneasy feeling. Like, I did not like this dude anymore. And it took me until this third episode when he had a lot of screen time. He is one of the most villainous characters from my childhood.
He is...
He's Victor Maitland from Beverly Hills Cop.
Excellent. I did not know that.
You cannot cast him as a heroic figure because he's terrible. He murdered Axel's friend in cold blood.
But every day he's got to go onto set and have somebody draw a snake on his face with a big pen. Not a good big pen either. And what is the golden path?
That's where you turn yourself into a worm.
Well, actually, no. But the golden path is...
What?
Well, the golden path is something that we are told many times that Paul cannot take himself.
The golden path is never explained in this book. It's explained in the next book.
The one that has not been dramatized yet.
Correct. Okay. God Emperor. It's explained in God Emperor of Dune.
Which is a book you highly recommend.
I don't know that I would recommend it to you two, but if you are in so far, it gives you a lot more of the pieces to figure out where they were going from here. So if you're interested in, like, I don't understand where all this is going, it gives you a lot more of the pieces.
Well, but maybe by the 16th book in the series, Deputy Assistant Director of Dune, you'll have all of the pieces together.
So,
I was gonna say, are you icing me on that stupid joke? Because I don't think I deserve to be iced on that joke. I thought that was perfectly good dad joke. Okay, anyway, sorry.
If you like the series so far and you don't want any spoilers, I would not listen to this part. However,
skip ahead.
I will spoil it.
5 minutes. Skip ahead. 10.
I'm not going to spend that long. It's not going to take that long. But so at this point, the average lifespan is 300 years per person because of the spice. Leto is transitioning into being a worm, basically. The giant worm.
Yes, I knew it. I was right.
Wait, he becomes King Worm?
He becomes God Emperor of Dune, which is the next book. And he, because he basically sees all of the future and all of the past, and he becomes almost immortal. He lives for 3,000 years. And so the next book picks up about 3,000 years into the future.
So his sister and all these characters are dead.
Dead, but inside him, he has them. He still talks to them. They're still all there. Because in this universe, spirits that are powerful like that don't die. They just change from one plane of existence to the next. And also, as a way to try and manipulate Leto, because at this point, what Leto has done is he has destroyed all spice production. There is no spice production at all, period. It has ceased. He has the spice reserves.
So Leto was meant to be the ruler of Dune at the end of the story?
Not at the end of this story.
No, not at the end of this story. He transitions into the leader many generations beyond.
Because Leto, at the end of this miniseries, Leto runs into the desert.
Yes. He starts...
I thought he was just running to run, and then he would come back and hang out with his sister.
That's a bit of artistic license that is not in the book. That was nice drama, but it wasn't in the book.
And why... All right. Okay. Well, I have forgiven a lot of the shallow depth sets, and I've forgiven a lot of the soap opera acting and whatnot, but why did they make the artistic choice to make Leto, as part worm guy, run through the desert super fast as if he was on a Kids in the Hall sketch where he's just running in front of a green screen?
I think that was their budget. I don't know.
Oh my God. It was,
I got
it
nothing.
It was hysterically bad.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. But maybe it was just the level of sci-fi effects at the time. But seriously, I expected Kevin McDonald to catch up to him and ask him questions and then fall behind.
So Leto becomes transitioning into the worm. And you get Shaitan, which is the devil, Shai-Hulud, which is the god. So Shai-Hulud was the worm that is the good worm, but you get Shaitan, which is the devil, which is the bad worm. So eventually Leto
is this a title or is this an actual one worm?
It's a title.
Okay.
Cause Leto eventually at the end of God Emperor of Dune, Leto dies. But when he dies, the sand trout that have covered his body in skin, then take off into the desert, but they retain Leto's memory. All of them. Each one of them.
And they then resume spice production?
Yes, they start rebuilding their own path into the planet.
Which is how spice is made.
Yes.
So Leto is really taking the only method of spice production into his body. He's shutting down spice production by stealing the source of spice.
Yes.
Okay.
And the golden path is he sees that if he doesn't, and he is a dictatorial, terrible, awful dickhead for 3,000 years. He's terrible.
He's worse than Paul?
In a different way. He's arrogant and like stupid, and they keep sending him new Duncan Golas, and he's like, I don't like this one, and he has it killed. He's like, oh, this one I'm going to play with, and then he has that one, and then he has it killed. But he plays with the Golas because it's like, this one amuses me this time, so I'm going to keep him around. So he has this, like, because they keep sending him new ones because it amuses him, you know, they keep creating new ones and creating more new ones and creating more new ones.
So there's this Duncan factory.
So God Emperor of Dune is a situational comedy?
A big snake eating clones?
It's a very different book. So, but he sees, because he can see the future clearly, if he isn't tyrannical for those 3,000 years, the universe will destroy itself. And he sees that. And so he keeps the universe together for those 3,000 years. And at the end of his reign, when he knows that he's going to die and go back into the desert, at that point, there is no more prescience. So no one knows the future anymore. The future vision of the Bene Gesserits and the Bene Tleilaqs and anyone on the Fremen and the no more of that. His gift of the golden path forward is that humans are now truly in control of their future.
So wait, this is like a 16 novel treatise on free will?
It's only the fifth book.
It's a 5-book treatise on free will?
There's more books after that.
Interesting.
I'm on the next book. I'm actually in Heretics of Dune now. So,
are you enjoying it?
Yeah. But I enjoy these books in a way that I don't think either of you would. So,
well, I mean
my endorsement is not necessarily a sterling endorsement, in as much that I like these books.
No. I'm
but it doesn't
I'm
make them good books.
Yeah. I'm happy if you enjoy them. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm not criticizing.
I'm not sure you're happy right now, but
well, okay. So we hear from Ganyma and Faradin and all these people because they crop up in the histories and show up in Leto's brain?
Yes. Throughout the next book, God Emperor of Dune, when he is trying to convince Duncan of certain things at certain times, Duncan's like, I don't believe your father would be proud of that. And he's like, hang on. And then he brings Paul out. And Paul says, now, Duncan, you know. And it's Paul's voice and Paul's mannerisms. And, you know, but big but here. At this point, however, he is the only human part left of him is like face and shoulders and arms. And the rest of him is giant worm on a cart.
On a cart?
Like Jabba the Hutt.
Like Jabba the Hutt.
Yeah. He's got teeny tiny puny little feet.
But he still runs fast.
Well, no, not anymore. Because he's in a big ass cart.
Does he wiggle? Can he wiggle through
He can.
Dunes? Okay.
He can. He doesn't.
Yeah, why would you? If you can sit there and talk to all of everybody you've ever met or ever will meet, no need to go make friends, new friends. You've got all the friends you need. You're also God Emperor, which seems like a bit much. Like, if you're God, why do you have to be Emperor? But, oh well. I can see one would lead to the other, but the first one would be like, no, I don't need.
It's just a title in their world.
I suppose.
Aren't there many emperors who claim to be from of divine origins?
Yeah, but there's not many. I mean, why, if you were God, why would you? Well, I guess you're right. Okay, I suppose you're right. There was a discussion at work the other day about whether a very like vociferous discussion about whether humans were descendants of God or were made out of pieces of God or were related in any way to God. I was surprised to learn that the answer is no. There is nothing. God has nothing to do with humans at all, except for he made them. And one of my coworkers looked to me to somehow back their argument of us all being parts of God. And I was like, you guys just make up this shit as you go along. I don't believe in any of it. So anyway, I thought it was hilarious. Because people were like launching into long, long monologues starting with, well, I'm not a theologian, but if you read the text, you will find out that God and humans are completely different.
Huh? These kinds of conversations are not allowed in my workplace.
They shouldn't have been allowed in my workplace either. But I'm not in charge of anything, so it's fine. And I don't engage in those conversations because I think it's silly and unproductive.
My workplace had a National Day of Prayer lunch today.
Did you?
Excellent. With chaplains.
Excellent. Did you? Because, well, I know of one chaplain who is free today. I think he has his job back, but...
I don't understand.
It's the
Paul Ryan the Paul fired Ryan. The congressional chaplain.
Oh.
And then... Nice. Then
he unresigned.
And then the chaplain's like... I'm going to actually withdraw my letter of resignation since I don't think the reasons you told me were actually valid. So if you want to fire me, go ahead, but I'm not going to resign anymore. And he's like, well, never mind. You got your job back. You're fine.
Way to have some conviction.
It's also
Paul Ryan.
Fucking weird, but oh well.
I don't even have a metric for what's weird anymore.
Exactly. That's the thing. Yeah. Note to self, I don't want Rudy Giuliani as my lawyer.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do.
You think so?
Yes.
Well, I don't think I want Donald Trump as my client, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think all the anti-Trump people are jumping on that. But yeah, it seems like we were going to find out soon that was going to be a really big part of the investigation, was whether there was some campaign finance shenanigans associated with that payment, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then Giuliani just squashed that?
I don't think he squashed it.
Oh, no.
No. In fact, it turns out Kellyanne Conway's husband, current husband, just tweeted out the actual law that would break. Which is kind of funny. He's apparently not a fan like his wife.
No, he's not.
But yeah, it turns out, though, campaign finance is not nearly the thing they were going after, but that's a whole different deal. Who knows what they're going after? It's interesting to see where all this leaking is coming from. It's also interesting to see the president on Twitter talking about how he has the right to fire anybody in the executive branch, which I don't think he does. He may think he does, but I don't think he has absolute power to fire anybody in the executive.
I do not think that word means what you think it means.
Yeah, so. But yeah, who knows? We're setting the new bar for normal. Woohoo! Cats and dogs living together.
If Obama ran in 2020, do you think he'd win?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No, because rednecks have learned how to vote.
Uh-uh. If
Bill Clinton ran in 2020, do you think he'd win?
Nobody named Clinton will ever be president ever again. George Clinton has a better chance of being president than anybody else named Clinton.
I think George Clinton's dead, is he not?
From Parliament Funkadelic?
I think he died, didn't he?
Maybe. Still, better chance. Hey, poor Chelsea Clinton. I mean, she seems to work for the devil, but she still doesn't have a chance. Sorry, that name. Oh, well.
No, I stand corrected. George Clinton is still alive.
Yes.
He'll never die.
Well, no, not in our hearts, that's for sure.
He'll be in Leto forever.
Oh, that's right. And Bootsy Collins to boot. So, blah, blah, blah. We do have the soap opera ending of Faradin grows some testicles and throws his mom under the bus. I thought it was interesting. I was not expecting it.
It was much more satisfying in the book, but yes.
Yeah, I can imagine.
It was super satisfying in the book.
It seems like Susan Sarandon just wasn't in it. So by having him show up and decided to go against his mom at the last minute didn't make much sense to me.
It was a much bigger deal in the book.
I didn't get the feeling she was going to triumph. So him like pulling the rug out from under her didn't have that impact on me, I suppose.
And with all of the talk of mysticism and preordained paths and merging with magic sand trouts to get supernatural powers, it still ended with a courtroom karate fight.
A little bit, yes. Yes, indeed. But, you know, that's okay. I mean,
it sucked that Jessica lost both her kids in the same day.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not great. And yeah, she's had a little hardship in her life. Maybe Gurney can whip out his Ballyset lute thing and give her some sweet, sweet salvation.
This was on broadcast television.
It was on cable.
Okay. It wasn't on broadcast. So we couldn't whip it out. Okay.
Yeah.
But we could hear it being whipped out from behind a curtain. Swing. Anyway.
Several screens, so you can't tell who it is.
Anyway. To jump ahead a little bit.
Not much.
Well, no, as far as like, normally I give my conclusion last, but I'm going to jump in first, I think. I mean, I guess I was glad I went on this ride, but I think I fell too much in love with the first miniseries, and the second miniseries let me down a little bit. Just too much soap opera. The reception on it, though, the people seemed to like it because it was much more accessible.
It was super dark. I mean, super dark. Compared to the first one.
It opens dark, that's for sure.
The first one's a love story. This one is a hate story.
Yeah, and there's like grumpy old Grandpa Moadib.
Oh, yeah.
I think to get anything out of any version of this story that we have seen so far, you need to have done homework. Because I got nothing out of the first movie. I had no idea what was going on. It made no sense. And it was had terrible storytelling choices. The first miniseries I enjoyed quite a bit more because I felt like I knew what was going on. I understood the story that I was supposed to be getting. But then...
Well, because you had
whiplash
a three-hour... With 3 hour primer on it.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly why. And then this one came along and I felt like I needed a primer before I watched it. Because it was incomprehensible to me in a way that's different than the original movie was. I mean, I think the narrative was fine. It wasn't confusing because of the way they made it. It was confusing because of how much crap they tried to cram into these three episodes without much explanation at all for those who weren't already indoctrinated into the world of the story.
Yeah, you would have to be pretty familiar with the books to get a whole lot out of it.
Well, can I offer a comparison that just occurred to me? It seems to me that one series of books that I loved a lot, I haven't reread them, but I think I might, is the Douglas Adams book, the Hitchhiker's Guide books. And we have yet to see any really successful Hitchhiker's Guide cinematic representations. They kind of seem a little cheesy and low budget. And I wonder if you haven't read the books and you watched those movies, you would get the same feeling that some of us got watching this, if you hadn't read the book, the Dune books.
Yes.
Okay. Because there's a lot of stuff going on in the Hitchhiker's Guide books, and it would be easy if you're just doing a movie to follow the simple plot. But without all of the little backstory and funny asides, I mean, of course, it's a different tone than Dune is. But
have you seen the newest movie?
I have not. Is it any good?
Not really.
Yeah, it's hard.
But if you had, I think it's not any good, because that's the problem, is if you're not really, really adept at your knowledge of the book, it's very difficult for the movie to make sense, other than it's just a big bundle of WTF.
And that one may be sort of impossible to do. Although I think Douglas Adams himself had an idea of putting it on an IMAX screen with a large, gigantic overall screen with lots of little things going on in several inner screens at the same time.
So you have to watch it like 5 times?
Yeah, or you just change your focus a little bit. Yeah, I don't know. Again, I don't know. It was never successfully done. So I'm going to take a quick break, but I'll be right back. And Jason can give his verdict, and Drew can give your... Well, I don't know. Maybe Drew's already given his verdict. We'll find out. So
My verdict is probably not worthy of much value, because I like this series. So I didn't like this as well as I liked the first series, but... You know, I think it's worth watching. Certainly as a completionist, at the very least, it's worth watching. But I like this story. To me, it's a very large contrast from the first series. But also, I'm really familiar with the books, so it makes it easier for me, because I can watch this and fill in the blanks in my head. So I have that as an advantage, maybe, where other people probably do not. So.
If you were going to rank the two miniseries and the original movie in order of overall quality, how would you rank them?
The top one is the first series. The second slot would be the second series, and the third one would be the Smithy Dune.
Oh, I think I'd agree with that ranking for sure.
But also, I think that that Smithy Dune and... Don't get me wrong. I love the Smithy Dune, but it is awful. I have no illusion that it's awful. I don't even make excuses for it. I just tell people, oh, it's awful. I love watching it, and I will watch it, and I have watched it many times. And it's on IMAX here every couple years, and I will go watch it on IMAX and spend money in a theater. But not because it's good, but just because it's one of those things. It's kitschy to me, and it's nostalgic for me, but it is awful.
Yeah, and I didn't think this one, I didn't think Children of Dune was awful. I just thought it was not enjoyable as someone who didn't already know the story from the books.
They should have never crammed, first of all, they shouldn't have crammed two books together. They should have left Dune Messiah. Dune Messiah would have been a good three episode series. Children of Dune would have been longer than 3 episodes. It would have been had to have been a good 6 episodes to make any good, true story out of it.
Where did Dune Messiah end? Did it end with Paul walking into the desert?
No. It ended well before that.
Yeah. Interesting. So they cut out a crap ton of stuff then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Dune Messiah is about half as long as Children of Dune. Children of Dune is as long as Dune. You know, they had to cut quite a bit from both to get them into the same amount as Dune. You figure they had 50% more material, but they only had the same amount of screen time. So that didn't translate well, I don't think.
Yeah, this one was rough.
Yeah.
But I thought James McAvoy was okay. Not great. But I did think Susan Sarandon and Alice Creed were pretty great with the material they were given, which... wasn't really high quality to begin with, but they did a good job.
I'm trying to think. So let's see, Dune Messiah. Maybe Dune Messiah does end with him walking in the desert. I'm trying to think back. Children of Dune starts. So I'm thinking, you know what? I'm thinking that's, and that must be it. That must be when Dune Messiah ends. It must be when he walks into the desert.
It seemed like, just watching the miniseries, it seemed like that first episode was an entire sort of self-contained story. Yeah,
that's probably true.
Cause the big time jump too.
Well, there's a big time jump from Children of Dune to God Emperor of Dune, because there's 3,000 years have passed.
Well, that's true. Okay. But
so, you know, this movie treats time with reckless abandon. Because to many of the main characters, time's irrelevant.
Well, what with the time, longevity increasing influence of spice.
Yes.
Although once you cut down all the spice production, don't you cut down everybody's longevity?
Yep.
Okay.
It's okay. For unhappy people.
Yeah. So, Brother Jay, what's your verdict on Dune? Now, we're gonna tackle Jodorowsky's Dune at some point in the future too, right? So we have one more Dune episode in the works.
Yeah.
Although it's not really about Dune itself. It's more about the director, Jodorowsky, and his wacky friends.
His vision.
Yes.
His visions of the future.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad we get to take this trip. I will vote. No, I'll vote for that second. The first miniseries is my favorite part of it so far. I mean, obviously, it was very successful. As we find out from Jodorowsky's Dune, the reason why he decided to do that at the time was because it was like a super popular book.
Yeah.
Yeah, like when Dune came out, it was a big deal.
It didn't hurt that it was super long.
Well,
and super complicated. I mean, it's challenging to read.
So is it up there in the I mean, how is it seen in that community? I mean, it's for sci-fi, cuz at the time we had Isaac Asimov, who was one of the more prolific writers, but it's funny cuz there's not a lot of Asimov like retellings these days. Like, I wonder if the Foundation series and that sort of thing is just kind of old.
I know very few people that have read Dune.
Huh. Well, maybe.
When did it come out? In the mid 60s originally?
I don't think so. I think it was the late 70s, early 80s.
No, definitely 60s or early 70s.
Yeah, I thought.
Because Jodorowsky was planning it in the early 70s. I'm thinking it may have been even late 50s. If only we had a machine.
Because God Emperor of Dune didn't come out till 81.
Well, I can see that, but.
1965.
Oh, okay. Well, there
you go. Dune Messiah was 69. Children of Dune was 76.
Okay.
Hey, yeah. That was an interesting year.
Indeed.
Actually, Dad and I were talking about that when we were looking at the fence that was partly blown down in our latest windstorm. And he's like, you know, when did Grandpa and I put in that fence?
78.
It's pretty good run for a 40-year-old fence.
Yeah.
And the tree that fell down is kind of fun. I mean, that's was pretty impressive. The whole root structure came up and everything.
Yeah, I'm glad it went towards the fence.
Yeah, no kidding. On their brand new deck, that would be unfortunate.
On Dad's car.
Well, yeah, that too.
Oh, well, the other part of the fence blew down over by that big swinging gate, and that almost hit his car.
Yep. So, anyway, anything else on Dune before we move to housekeeping?
I doubt it. I think we've beaten this horse to death.
Okay. Well, you know.
Did I tell you about Dad's poor cell phone etiquette on the night of that windstorm?
No.
So, oh, dear. That was...
You didn't get, like, a penis picture, did you?
No, does that happen?
Not yet.
No, so my wife was out of town, and, oh, yeah, because I didn't talk to you guys last week.
Yeah, we haven't heard anything. Is this for the podcast, or?
Sure, yeah, okay. No, that's fine. So it was really windy one night, and then It started like around midnight, I think, is when the winds really kicked up. And then it was pretty windy for most of the next day. And when I came home, I went and picked up the kids and came home. And that's when I really started to see the damage that the wind had been doing around our neighborhoods. Just driving.
Did you lose power?
I did, yeah.
Did your generator thing work?
Oh, God damn it. That's another...
Oh, sorry.
That's another... I was... yeah, thanks for derailing me. I was so mad at myself. I don't know. Because I don't know where the power cord is for my generator.
Oh.
So I spent all this money and effort to get a hook, an easy hookup. And I have a generator. And I had an occasion to use it. And I couldn't because of my poor organizational skills. And
maybe the rats took it.
The general chaos that is my life. I was so mad.
Like, sorry.
But yeah, I was just mad at myself, no one else.
Yes.
It was ridiculous. It's just one of those things. But so I got home, driving through the neighborhoods, and like trees are down everywhere, and I'm looking at like all the roofs that have been damaged and all the fences that are destroyed by trees that have been blown down. My neighbors on each side of me happened to have some damage done, but I somehow squeaked by without anything. But then I had a voicemail from Dad saying he had some damage and could use some help, and to give him a call when I got home. Which is a little unsettling, because he doesn't really ask for help too often. But, and, you know, I was a single parent, so I was like, oh, all right. So I got home, and I called him back to tell him that I was home and to figure out what's going on. He did not answer his phone. So then I called the house line. He did not answer that phone. And then I start to think about, like, oh, what has he been doing? Is he trapped under a tree that he tried to chainsaw in half or something? Or
so we had people on ladders that day. I mean, I sent out the email probably far too late for you guys to be helpful, saying, like, be careful, shit is on fire all over Anchorage.
Yeah. So I had to, like, scoop up the kids and say, we're going to go over to Grandma and Grandpa's, but you're going to stay in the car until I make sure everything's okay.
Yes. Yeah. Learn from Journey's mistake.
I was going to say, we don't want a mermy situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, yeah, I went over there. And it was, it turned out to be nothing too bad. It's just he'd been outside working. It didn't answer the phone. All right.
Yeah. Well.
So we got to see the tree down and the fence kind of beat up a little bit, but otherwise everything else is pretty okay.
So, let's see. What did you have another homeowner story, or was that not for the podcast?
Oh, no, I did. That happened today. So I think also because of the windstorm, I have no idea, but this is what I'm guessing. I think it blew a bunch of dust in, either into the house or into the duct somewhere. I think it ended up clogging up the air filter in my furnace. Because on Friday night, my furnace stopped working. And it still gets pretty chilly here in the evenings.
It snowed the other day.
Yeah. So it was kind of a bummer not to have a furnace. Luckily, I know a good plumber who's a good dude and was willing to come out on a Sunday to look at it. But on Saturday, I was monkeying around with it and just trying to figure out if I could see anything, even though I have no knowledge or expertise. But a shocking amount of confidence, so there's that. But yeah, so I did pull out the air filter, and it was super dirty. And it wasn't even that old. So I pulled it out, put a new filter in, let it sit for a while. And then eventually it kicked back on, fired, and seemed to be okay. So I'm guessing the airflow was blocked, and that was, I don't know all the mechanics of the furnace, but I'm assuming there's some sort of sensors or pressure checks in there that will prevent the burners from fully firing if there's not enough airflow as a safety precaution. And seems I'm like a guessing, good idea. Yeah, I'm guessing that's what was happening, because the furnace has been working fine. But so I canceled the Sunday call out for my guy and rescheduled it for today, you know, during his normal working hours. So he came out and took a look at my furnace, pulled all the things he needed to apart and looked at it, and everything looked good. Cleaned up the fire with the flame sensor a little bit. That had a little bit of corrosion on it, but he cleaned that, put it back. Cleaned it up, vacuumed it out, said everything looks good. Told me it's everything looks good, but technically it's getting to the end of its, you know, likely usable lifetime, so I should start budgeting for a new one. But nothing he saw indicates that that's imminent. So that was good. That was all good news. And then he looked at my hot water heaters, because I have two of them. And yada, yada, yada. Tomorrow I'm getting a new hot water heater.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, he started looking. Well, first he looked at the date of the manufacturer and the brand, and was like, this has to be a record.
Well, your house isn't even all that old, is it?
99.
Oh, okay. Well, so I guess
the grand scheme of things, not that old, but yeah. It's, you know, 20. So the hot water heaters are 20 years old. My furnace is 20 years old. But he said the type of hot water heater I have is like sort of the construction grade, you know, cheapo version that gets put into every house. And he says he's seen them last as little as 2 years. Never more than 10. And he was shocked that they were still humming along in my garage after almost 20.
Sweet.
And then
You really only use like one of them, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
Now, are you replacing the two with one?
I am, yeah. Okay. So he was looking at the tops of them, and so they're the lines in one, out one in the other, and then out into the house. And the lines coming into the first one and out to the house had galvanized nipples at the top of them that connected to the water lines, that he said were looked so corroded that he thought they might start spurting water any day.
Oh,
I was like, oh, I'm glad you looked. Yeah. And so he recommended that if he had the right parts in his van to just replace them. I was like, that sounds like a great idea. I love it. And so he tried to get the first one off, and it broke. I mean, it was so corroded that it broke with the threads still in the top of the hot water heater. He's like, oh, that's bad. I was like, that's what I love to hear. Oh, that's bad.
Yeah.
So then he's like looking at it, and it actually fired, and it when my hot water heater heats up, it makes this like pinging and popping sounds. He's like, oh, yeah, you hear that? That's the scale popping. And he said that's pretty much the death rattle of hot water heaters.
Oh.
I was like, oh, they've been doing that for 6 years.
Is there like a foot of sand at the bottom of each tank?
No, because I've drained them recently.
Oh, okay.
Because I had a leaky drain valve. I had to replace that.
Leaky boom boom down. Informer, you know, say that I'm a stormy, I go blame. I leaky boom boom down.
Take the man that says that I'm a stormy, stab somewhere down the lane. I leaky boom boom down. So he recommended that that first one was not going back in service. So he bypassed it. So I'm down to one heater right now. But he also recommended that they are going to die, and if I don't do something about it, he will be changing it out while in standing water.
Ah.
So I was like, well, that sounds terrible.
Yeah.
So let's do it. So, yeah. So I actually got to use my new truck and go get a hot water heater.
Oh, sweet.
From Lowe's. Excellent. And it's staged in my garage.
Awesome. Well, congratulations on your ability to do that in a hurry. And I'm glad that he doesn't have to do it while standing in water.
Yeah, me too.
Because that would not have been fun. Although it probably would have helped a little bit with decluttering the garage.
Yeah, well, I already had to do that just to get my new giant truck inside.
Oh, okay, yeah, there we go. I was thinking, there's nothing like standing water in all your garage full of boxes to inspire you to well, at least get rid of everything that was...
Are you kidding? There's nothing like being in the parents' basement and there's water everywhere, standing water.
Oh, yeah.
Where you have to pick up everything off the floor.
Yep.
I told you guys about that when I had the leaking drain valve, right?
Huh.
Yeah, you mentioned it.
Yeah, it was still winter out, so you know, you pull your car in that's had some snow on it and you have snow melt in the garage.
Yeah.
And then there was one day I noticed that the snow melt appeared to be coming towards my car, not moving away from my car.
Okay, well,
that was the first indication I had that there was another contributing source. And that was coming out from underneath all the crap I had piled up in my garage.
Man, I had a leaky furnace because we had an all-in-one. The reason why we had to spend like most of Kelly's inheritance on a furnace a couple years ago was because every year we were spending like $1,500 of emergency money because it was not, you didn't know when shit was going to go bad. So, yeah. And every time they put it in, they're like, yeah, you probably should budget for a new one because you're going to have to keep spending this money every so often. And the parts always have to be flowing up emergency. And yeah, so we're much happier now.
Yeah, I knew it was a bad sign when I was asking him about my furnace and saying, trying to be like a responsible homeowner and ask him like, well, what is going to go bad on the furnace? What parts should I have on hand? And he just laughed. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, well.
Great.
So, Brother Jay, any housekeeping on your end?
I had to, last Friday, a week ago tomorrow, I took my car into the shop for some recall work. And a couple warranty things that I wanted to have fixed because it was bothering me. And when Mom was here, we took a road trip and it became really obvious I needed to have some work done, some squeaks and noises that were starting to drive me batshit crazy. So, I took the car in on Friday. They said, well, we'll call you in a couple hours. We've got a couple things to do. They called me at like four in the afternoon and said, that loaner car that we gave you, just keep that all weekend and we'll call you on Monday afternoon because we think it's going to be at least that until we get the rest of the parts in. Because one of the things they had to do was pull out the passenger seat to fix a part.
Is this a vacuum? That's
a carpet cleaner.
Ah, got it. Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, so I thought, what? So they gave me this loaner car, which was like this Ford Focus, which is this teeny tiny little car compared to what I'm used to driving. And it's not comfortable. And it was, anyway, that's what I ended up with for the weekend because I didn't get my car back until Tuesday night. So I was basically deciding this weekend, I'm like, I am not going anywhere in this tiny deathmobile of a vehicle. So I'm going to clean house. So I only have one rug in the entire house. It's my living room. It's a giant Persian rug. I've had it as long as we've lived here. And I've had a carpet cleaner for as long as we've lived here. Actually had it at the old house because we had a dog that would chew on things like pens and would get all over the white carpet. So I had a pretty expensive Bissell carpet cleaner. Big upright, like a giant upright vacuum, but cleans carpets with water solution and stuff. So I thought, well, I'm going to clean the carpet in my living room because I haven't cleaned it in some time, probably 8 or 9 years. And so I pre-treated it with some spotting agent and some other stuff. And I pull my carpet cleaner out of the garage and I put it in the living room and it doesn't work. And so I'm like, oh, well, that's lovely. So I tinker with it some more and it doesn't work. And I tinker with it some more and it doesn't work. So the vacuum portion works, but the sprayer portion does not. So basically it's just a really loud vibrating vacuum cleaner, which does no good when you want to clean a carpet.
Yeah. Also not as good as suction if there's no water there.
Yeah. So I was looking around town, like looking at Fred's and looking at Walmart and Target and trying to find where I could buy a carpet cleaner that was comparable to the one I had. And of course, the only one who had it in stock was Walmart. And Walmart is like the place of last resort for me.
Sure.
I will order it from Amazon and wait for a couple days usually before I'll go to Walmart. Because I just don't like giving them money. And going there anyway is such just an awful experience. That I just avoid it because it's just not pleasant. So they had the one I had, and I called Derek, and I said, there's no way this box is going to fit in this tiny little car. So, you know, when you're home from work or on your way home from work, can you meet me at Walmart so we can go get this vacuum carpet cleaner that they have? And he goes, yeah, no problem. So he comes home, we go up to the Walmart. I meet him there. So he's got his pickup, and I've got this tiny little speck. We go into the Walmart and we talk to the guy, and he's like, oh, yeah, well, what we meant to tell you is we have it in stock, but not until 10 o'clock tonight when the truck comes in. But he says the other store down the street that's, you know, a couple 6 miles away, they have it in stock. If you want to go over there, I'll call them and have them set it aside. So, all right, I drive this little death trap mobile to the other Walmart, and Derek drives his pickup there. Derek beats me there by like 10 minutes because this car is super small and slow. Super efficient, though, like 35 miles with a gallon. So get to the other Walmart. The other Walmart says, oh, no, we don't have it. It's not coming in until the truck at 10 o'clock tonight. And I'm thinking, I think this is a stock phrase they use. This seems to be... You know, do you all have trucks that come at 10 o'clock with these strange carpet cleaners that magically appear at 10 o'clock at night? I think you just don't have them, which is fine. So I just went home.
Wait, you didn't go to the garden center and pull up a lawn chair and just tell them you're going to wait?
No. If they don't have it, I'm not going to give them my money. Assholes can just die. So, I went home, went on Amazon, said, you know, this is what I want. This is the same thing, same price as Walmart, free shipping, be at my house on Monday. So I thought, oh, okay, I'll wait till Monday. So carpet cleaner comes Monday, which is fine, great. And so I thought I wanted to try it out to make sure that it worked. Because if it didn't work, Amazon, I'd send it right back and get one that did work. I just filled it with cleaning solution and water and then took a pass over one of the strips of my carpet. And that tank is two passes on my rug.
Awesome.
The postscript to that story is that after I did two strips of my carpet, you could very plainly, clearly see the different colors of my carpet versus what was clean and what was not. And so then I had to sit, I'm like, oh, God, I have to finish cleaning it because otherwise I'm going to look at it and it's going to just gross me out. And then I told Derek, I'm like, look at this. He goes, what did you do? And I said, what do you mean? He goes, what, did you take this to the garden and suck dirt out of the garden? And I said, no, this is from the rug. He said, there can't be that much dirt in that rug. So I said, all right, well, you try it. And so he ran a couple passes with the vacuum, with the carpet cleaner, and he finally said, that is disgusting. And then he proceeded to rearrange the living room so he could clean the entire rug because it grossed him
out. Did you call friends to take a turn? You could sell passes of
the- no. I would, yeah. It's my own secret, not so secret.
No, for
$10,
you could take one run and see the difference.
So awful. So
this tank looks like a giant, like,
chocolate
mocha
pudding.
Yeah.
It was horrific. It was truly horrific. And we vacuum regularly, so it's not like we don't vacuum. So, I don't know. It was just horrifying. So, carpet's the devil. That's what I have to say.
Yeah, well, we put laminate in the floor when Journey was born. just after Journey was born, mostly because of the dog, because we have a dog that's fucking not completely continent and has kidney issues and whatever. So we thought, well, you know, we don't want to keep basically shampooing the carpet every single day while we have a child in the house because of, you know, Kawasaki and whatever. Plus, it's just a pain in the ass. And the carpet never gets clean, blah, blah. So we put in this laminate. Well, let me tell you, this is pretty expensive laminate. And it turns out a not completely continent dog can fuck up laminate, too. So that and a leaky dishwasher. We end up taking... it's funny. My house is a disaster. You have nothing to worry about, Drew. I have laminate in half of my kitchen. Because I just haven't taken the time to pick up all of the laminate in the kitchen. And I don't want to replace it. Because when they installed the laminate, they did bullshit things like not put it under the dishwasher. So, yeah. Anyway, but looking around the rest of the place, I mean, most of the house with laminate is fine, you know, as my daughter could tell you, it could probably stand to be cleaned a little more often, but, there are some seams where it's like, oh, man, but replacing pieces of laminate seems very unpleasant. So even though we have an extra box, it's like, I don't want to do it. So we'll see.
No, that's one of those things that seems like it's a pain in the neck, but should be relatively straightforward, but it never is.
Oh, it can't be.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you actually have to like cut a piece out or something. At that point, I'm like, nope, I'm done.
Well, you just need to ask Dad because he put like 80% of the rec room together and then was like, uh-oh, and then had to pull it apart and redo it.
Yeah, but I don't want to pull my entire house apart.
More than once, I think.
Yeah, but...
Oh, poor guy.
Well, that's the thing. Plus, I hate those kind of things. I hate, and that's reason why literally we have laminate on a half of my kitchen floor. Is because the idea of just, because it wouldn't take very long, although laminate turns out it's very heavy. It wouldn't take very long to just go in there and take the rest of it out there. Because they went right over the linoleum. It's perfectly good floor underneath. I basically all I have to do is cut new transitions, which I have plenty of left. But the idea of it is just a nightmare. So eventually I'll have to do that. And I've got so much to do in this house before we can go on a vacation and have people come in and feed our pets. Oh, well, anyway. Yeah, so that's all my house. I don't have any housekeeping.
Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on a new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.